We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast is brought to you by Aspers Casino Newcastle, home of the £4 pint on match day. That's all Newcastle home games and any televised Newcastle fixture. The offer applies from midday until midnight on all draft beers. Be gamble aware, over 18s only. Visit begambleaware.org. Be drink aware, and for details and T's and C's, visit aspersnewcastle.co.uk.
It's the True Faith Podcast with me, Si Campbell. I am joined by Craig Hope, who usually contributes to our patron, but has joined us for an international break special to talk about all things Newcastle and maybe a little bit of England as well. I also have John Lane with me here in the studio. Craig from the Merry Heights of Gosforth in Newcastle has joined us. So we'll get straight into it, Craig, because your latest piece in the Daily Mail has caused a stir, some of it just down to the wording of the, or the hyperbole, as some people have accused you, of the headline about Newcastle kind of being the super club that's come crashing down to earth in the space of kind of an 8-month period of the season. So that's where we'll start, Craig. Tell us about your article, kind of where that kind of came from.
Yeah, I mean, the point was that they're not a super club that's come crashing back down to earth. The point is they were never a super club. That was the essence of the piece, really, that the illusion, a top four finish, Champions League football, the illusion that gave was that Newcastle had arrived, that the top six, capital T, capital S, was now the top seven, capital T, capital S. And that was never really the case. And while I do honestly believe if Newcastle had been free of injuries, yes, they could have competed on that front again this season. That is more so because of the brilliant manager they've gotten, the good group of players they managed to assemble through really smart recruitment and the coach and improvement of those already inherited. But as an actual football club, in terms of if you take all of that away, do Newcastle have a right to be up there in the top four, you know, playing Champions League football season on season right now? Well, no, they don't. Absolutely not. You know, you've just got to look at the bare numbers to realise that in terms of the last account showed them £200 million behind Tottenham, who are the poor relations with regards to top six, £200 million behind with regards to commercial revenue. I think the last count had them as having the ninth highest wage bill in the Premier League. Now, ordinarily, you would say 1 to 20 in the wage table should probably equate to 1 to 20 in the actual standing. So the point I make is a positive one in that what Newcastle achieved last year was they beat FFP, they beat the financial curve, they beat what is expected of them, and they did that through Eddie Howe, through players, through momentum, through, I called it in the piece, it was almost like the entire football club, owners, management, staff, players, supporters, media, all a lot of it, we were all riding this magic carpet for a period. Now this season, the carpet has come back down to earth. That is not a criticism, that is not negative, that is not hyperbole, it's realism. It's you know, that is where they are at now. They're at a point whereby they're 10th in the Premier League. I don't think they're going to finish any higher than 8th, even with a good run between now and the end of the season. They won't be bringing, you know, they won't be ending that wait for silverware. So it's time to take stock of where the club is at and where it needs to go to. And while the tone of the piece wasn't at all negative, I thought it was really balanced, and people who have read it and, you know, don't just react to a headline on social media, have called it so. I think it's it captures mistakes that have been made. Now, could Newcastle have carried on, you know, riding that magic carpet this season? Yes, they could have done. A football club in recent times has never had as much goodwill and much momentum behind it as Newcastle had at the very end of last season. But since then, mistakes have been made, and that was always going to happen. They couldn't continue to get absolutely everything right, which quite incredibly is what they did for a period during the first 19 months of the new ownership in Eddie Howe. But mistakes were made in recruitment last summer. We might come back to this further on in this pod, you know, with specifics. I won't go into it in detail, but, you know, recruitment last summer, they got that wrong. I said that on a podcast with you, Si, in September. You know, I think I was one of the very first to call out the nature of the recruitment. Recruitment has got wrong. Medical, you know, the medical side of things in terms of the diagnosis and the treatment of injuries. Yes, part of that has been unfortunate. You cannot escape that. But come on, there's a big enough body of evidence now to say that it's more than just bad luck. So those two things combined, the injuries plus the recruitment, which them two actually do run into each other, plus the regression into regression, would you call it that? But players who are playing way beyond what they are ordinarily capable of, coming back to a level which was always likely to happen. You know, all of those factors combined leave Newcastle where they're at now. And I've called it in the piece a crossroads. You know, this summer is a really, really big summer for the club. And while I think they will continue, because the ambition, the drive is there, there's some good people at the club, while they will continue on that upward trajectory over time, you know, it has just slowed, and they've come back to a point now whereby we can say this season has been a reality check, and that was the point of the piece.
It's a really tough one. I've been talking about it all season, but you've kind of hinted on it without saying the word, is the expectations, because of that, because of getting in the Champions League, and because of the fact that everything went right for those 19 months. Like, we got so used to the idea that nothing could possibly go wrong for this club, this ownership, and this manager. And it's been a really tough season of, has it, crashing down is, you know, it's a nice way of putting it, because it feels like that. That's how everyone's perceiving it. And that's kind of what the reaction's been like after every game. It's been disaster because it's not gone as well as it did the season before. And we got so used to the success and the upward trajectory that even a plateau, which is what I would call this season currently, yes, we're not fourth, but if we were meant to be on par for kind of, the club seemed to be expecting a lower finish and a run in some of the cups. That's kind of par, maybe a bit below if we finished eighth or lower. We've plateaued a bit. And I think it's kind of perceived as a massive fall off from where we thought we were going. And it's been a big reality check. Realism is probably the right way to describe it. I know you've kind of come back to some of the criticism you've had over this headline, which I'll say, because you can tell the people who criticize haven't read the article, but it is realism. It's kind of, this is the situation that we find ourselves in, and you're right. John, I'll bring you in here as a kind of, I feel like you're one of the more positive members of the True Faith establishment in terms of the view of the season as a whole. But do you agree that kind of, in terms of where we are now, this is a realistic way to look at it? It's where we are. We don't deserve to be in the top four, and there's a lot of work to do to kind of get back to where that is.
Yeah. I mean, the league table doesn't lie. I think, you know, that's a simple thing, isn't it? You put in the season what you get out of it. There has been bad luck there, absolutely. But I think some of that bad luck's been of what we're making. We'll probably get onto it later, but, you know, the news about Sven Botman this week, that just says to me that, you know, that's just one of those things that's been mismanaged. I think there's going to be a lot of lessons learned from the season, but at all levels. And I think that's probably the biggest takeaway I've got, that we're at a club now where if they make mistakes, they want to learn from those mistakes. And I think that's the biggest difference to maybe pre-takeover, where they consciously knew the mistakes they were making. They were quite happy to continue to make them. And yes, we want to strive to be that top six competitive side. But to get there, it is going to take a hell of a lot. And, you know, Craig's right. This summer's massive, because I think, you know, there's going to be at least one or two outgoings you would have thought. Adidas money's coming in. We still don't have a training kit sponsor. No doubt they'll want to do something with stadium sponsorship at some point. They're going to try and unlock all these opportunities. You know, there's always, you know, there's NFT deals, all of this kind of stuff. And all of that's going to go into the mix. And it's, how do you then reinvest that and get the club back? Not back to where it was last season, but I suppose just building and moving forward and progressing.
End of season friendlies in Australia as well.
Of course.
That.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think you've mentioned bad luck there, and Craig, I know you've got a view on some of the things that have happened this season. There's a lot of stuff that's been thrown at the club that was probably unexpected. You know, the injuries have been ridiculous, and we will get onto that in part two of the show. But, you know, Tonali, the fixture list as it landed, all the away cup fixtures, all the big glamour ties in Europe, you know, there's been things that the club couldn't have predicted. There's also been, you know, the FFP bans for, not bans, point deductions being handed out, which kind of changed the view of Oberg. We really can't, we can't just go and kind of push the line there. So it's a really difficult position for me, and I've kind of alluded to this in quite a few podcasts recently, that I'm still completely behind the club, and I think it is just down to bad luck and kind of an unprecedented season of things. But there are 100% mistakes that have been made. There's definitely some stuff that you've mentioned, Craig, like the recruitment in hindsight now does look like it didn't set us up correctly for the season. And I suppose I want your view on this, Craig. How much of what's happened in the last 9 months is bad luck, and how much could the club have prevented, or how much will they be thinking, yeah, we should have done things differently?
To go back to recruitment, and, you know, I'm repeating myself to a degree, Si, because this is conversations we've had on previous pods for a long time now. I thought the recruitment had to be more pragmatic in that the budget they had, and I wrote an article in September where I refer to it as, you know, you don't go out in the position Newcastle were in, you don't go out and buy cryptocurrency. You don't go out and buy players whose value might mature down the line. Now, I wrote that on the eve of Newcastle going to Manchester United in the League Cup, playing absolutely wonderfully with all the cryptocurrency in the team. I've got absolutely battered for it. But the point I made stood true. And I doubled down that week and said, you know, over time, this recruitment will cost Newcastle. Sorry, not over time. In the isolation of this season, that recruitment will cost Newcastle. The point I make, and I repeat it in the article I've just written for the Daily Mail as well, you know, was that Newcastle could not afford to spend £52 million on a marquee signing in Sandro Tonali, who clearly needed time to adapt. Betting bans aside, even if he hadn't been banned, it was looking like Tonali needed more time than perhaps Newcastle thought he would do. They couldn't afford to spend another £38 million on a player who, while his season has been wrecked by injury, and that is unfortunate, and I like Harvey Barnes as a player, could they afford to spend that £38 million on a left winger when their best player for me this season was always likely to be a left winger, Anthony Gordon, and you've got a glaring weakness on the right in Miguel Almiron? Could they afford to do that? Could they also afford to commit the best part of £60 million on two young fullbacks in Tino Livramento and Lewis Hall, who they were reluctant to use and would not, you know, have hardly featured? Do you know, guys, I'm going to ask you this question now, because this was in the article, it's testing if you read the article as well. Out of the four summer signings, which they committed the best part of £150 million on, do you know how many Premier League starts they've made between the four of them?
It's a good question, and no, I didn't pick up that. Go on, Craig.
17.
Wow.
17. So that is incredible. You know, at a pivotal key summer in the club's history, when they've got a chance to cement their club and, you know, cheat that FFP curve by staying there, and, you know, they're getting the recruitment right again, like they had done previously, and all credit to them, they got it so badly wrong. They didn't improve the starting 11. They didn't even really, you know, give the squad greater depth, because two of the players who were, you could argue, were there as squad depth haven't really played in Livramento's Hall. It wasn't pragmatic. It didn't help them for this season. The knock-on effect has been that the same players who went week on week on week last year have been asked to go week on week again, and we've seen the injury problems build up. Now, the analogy I kicked off the article with was that the head and the tail of Newcastle are very different at the moment. You know, you've got on Saturday night, you'll have Anthony Gordon and Bruno Guimarães playing at Wembley for England versus Brazil. That gives the illusion, and, you know, it's not an illusion, you know, it is genuine, it is there. You've got two of Newcastle's best players playing in a showcase friendly in front of the whole world at Wembley. Wow, you know, isn't that great? By comparison, in Dubai, Eddie Howe is struggling to organise a five-a-side game this week. There are about six or seven, I think, fit senior players currently out in Dubai. The head and the tail, the club is stretched. When a club is stretched, that is when gaps appear. I went on in the article to talk about the tail weighing heavy. While you've got the head of the club with some brilliant manager, some very good players, the ambition of the owners, wanting to do things, that trying to stretch into the distance, the tail at the moment is still weighing too heavy on the football club. A stadium that doesn't meet demand or maximise commercial revenue. A training ground that, yes, whilst improved, is nowhere near the best. The absence of a sporting director. A sporting director who came in, took a look at the club, did some good work, did some okay work, had his own frustrations. He then left. You've got the inability or the reluctance, whatever you may call it, FFP restraints, to pay Joe Linton exactly what he wants. You know, risk losing a very good player there. You've got the risk, the threat of Bruno Guimarães going this summer, Kieran Trippier going this summer, Callum Wilson going this summer. So all of a sudden, a club that 12 months ago for which everything seemed so certain is now tormented by doubt and all these unanswered questions. So, like I said, I come back to that word realistic. That is where Newcastle United are at right now. You can bury your head in the sand if you want and say injuries are going to clear in the summer. They'll all come back. Everything will be great. They'll spend a load of money. Why will injuries clear in the summer? Why are they going to spend a load of money and get those signings right? If anything, on the evidence of what they did in this transfer market last summer, you'd have less confidence in that. So lots of unanswered questions. And during the course of the pod, what we're trying to do is answer some of them.
I mean, I would very much like to bury my head in the sand based on the picture you've painted there, Craig. But yeah, on the summer transfer window, I think you couldn't forecast what happened with Tonali and Barnes. You know, the length of Barnes's injury was borderline ridiculous. But I take your point that Tonali, even if he hadn't been banned for what happened, we weren't sure if he was going to be the answer and if he was going to be the immediate solution. But I suppose by having him available, you might not have ran some of those other players into the ground in the way that we have done. Same with Barnes, just by, you know, the whole point of him was to be able to rotate with some of those other wingers, albeit I kind of agree with you. We needed someone for the right-hand side, and that's never been more evident than the kind of the return we're getting from Miguel Almiron and Murphy, who work really hard, but that, you know, they have their limitations. Go on, Craig.
Yeah. So I'm like I say, I could make an individual case for all of them. I think, you know, Sandro Tonali is a really classy footballer. I was out in Milan for the semi-final between the two Milan clubs, Champions League last year. I thought he was the best player on the pitch. Really liked him. We saw against Aston Villa what he can do, what he could bring. He looks a real class act, you know. I'm not saying Sandro Tonali is bad. I'm not saying Harvey Barnes is bad. All I'm saying is when you've got a limited budget and you're working in an FFP world, you've got to make some tough decisions as to what you really, really need, you know. And if the opportunity cost is not signing Harvey Barnes to bring in a right winger, or the opportunity cost is not signing Sandro Tonali to bring in a number six with Premier League experience and hit the ground running on day one, that's the point I make.
Yeah.
It's no supporters want you to be so extreme one with same after a win. Everything's wonderful after a defeat. Everything's terrible. It's not. There's a middle ground. I'm not positive. I'm not negative. I'm realistic.
I feel like this season, it's never been more like that. You know, every single week at the moment, because we are winning, then losing, then winning, then losing. And the reaction is flipping from one and the other. Like, Howe's had his time to Howe's definitely going to sort it out to Howe's, you know, there's questions over the manager. But I suppose to round up this point, one, how much of what's happened and the kind of catalogue of stuff you've described there, Craig, that is the crux of where we're at and all the problems we now have to overcome in what's going to be a huge summer, how much of that is the result of mistakes, as the club kind of not planned for, versus it's just been unexpected and unprecedented? And then, can it be fixed? How quickly can it be fixed this summer? Big questions.
Everyone wants a definite answer, you know. Is it all down to mistakes? You know, should we call out the owner? Should we call out the manager? Should we call out the medical department? Or is everything just unfortunate? No one's to blame. And, you know, this has just been one bad season of bad, you know, one season of bad luck. Let's just box it off and go again. Well, what's the truth? It's somewhere in between. Of course it is. It was ever thus, you know. Have mistakes been made? Yes, absolutely. Have they been unfortunate with Sandro Tonali's bet and ban and the injury to Harvey Barnes and, you know, refereeing decisions in Paris? Yes, absolutely. I could sit here and make a convincing case for the whole thing being bad luck or the whole thing being a catastrophe. My honest opinion is that it's a combination of the two. And you touched on it there earlier, Si. You used the phrase, lessons have to be learned. I do believe, you know, Eddie is a young, smart enough guy. There's people in that club who will look at this season and see it as a learning curve. They've got to learn their lessons going into this summer, because this summer is huge for the club, absolutely huge.
John, just to finish off this part, any alternate thoughts here? Do you think it's as, I'm not going to say disastrous, because that's not the point. It's realistic. I agree, Craig. Do you think it is, how much do you think this is down to bad luck? And do you believe that it is just a case of to coin a phrase used by a previous manager, is it a roll your sleeves up in the summer job? And do you think it can be fixed quite easily?
I think there's elements that can be fixed quite easily. But, you know, I think ultimately what they didn't maybe appreciate is how much this campaign was going to take out of them. I think the Champions League hit them massively. those three clubs were probably the best from a commercial point of view that the club could have hoped for. But actually, from a playing point of view, it was probably the worst case scenario. And actually, if you remember, we lost against Dortmund at home, and that's when it kind of felt like it started to unravel the season a bit. That's when the injuries really started to pile up. And up until that point, we were actually on really, really good form. That's kind of when it all started to change a little bit. So it's about what lessons they learn from that period of time. And I think the lesson you learn is that you don't try and rush Murphy back. You don't try and rush Willock back. You don't try and, Botman playing on one knee and whatever else. You know, they're the lessons that they've got to learn, really. And think about, you know, were we a bit arrogant in the summer and almost kind of thought, actually, we're in a good place. Let's start thinking about the future as well. And, you know, that's for another day, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, you've touched on Botman's knee, which is exactly where we'll come back for part two of this show, because injuries is big news yet fucking again this season. We'll be back after these short messages.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Part two then, Craig, as I mentioned before, injuries is way back up on the agenda again. You know, this the turn of the new year, three game weeks, a thing of the past. The injury situation was meant to get better, and yet here we are. Harvey Barnes is out again. Sven Botman's got another massive injury. We're still fielding a kind of threadbare team for every game. Is it time for serious questions to be asked about how, one, all of the playing staff has been managed, and two, who's managing them? Is there a problem at Newcastle United with medical staff, or, you know, what on earth is happening this season, and is it going to let up?
Absolutely. I don't know the answers, but I certainly know the questions, and I know the questions that need to be asked and will be asked of Eddie Howe when we see him next Friday ahead of the West Ham game. And yeah, you know, I used the phrase earlier, didn't I? There's a big enough body of evidence now, this season, a huge body of evidence and bodies strewn all over the place at the same time to suggest that this is more than just misfortune. There's something wrong with Newcastle's, you know, one of, if not all, of the following. Training schedule, playing style, what the players are being asked to do during the week and on a Saturday, the diagnosis of injuries, the treatment of injuries, the rehab program, the period and the point at which players are being asked to return, the return to play program in terms of, you know, do players need to play more under 21s matches before they come back into the first team? All of that together needs to be reviewed. On top of that, they've got to ask the question, are the players they've got, are they actually robust enough for where Newcastle want to go? A, as a club who plays every 3 days, every 4 days, and B, as a team in the isolation of what Eddie Howe wants to do with them, with that intensity, is our identity. They've got to look at players, you know, can Callum Wilson do that? Can Joe Willock do that? Can Sven Botman do that now? Is Joe Linton a player at 27 whose body might not be able to do that? You know, what you tend to find is, I've always thought this as well, you know, that the athletes in the team tend to get injured more because they're going full throttle, you know, week on week on week, you know, every 4 or 5 days. It's the players who are, and I hope Bruno Guimaraes takes this the right way, it's the players who are less athletic, the footballers who just play the football, who get less injured, if you know what I mean. You know, I'd put Kieran Trippier's got, other than the broken foot and the recent problem, Kieran Trippier's got a good injury record because he's more of a classy footballer, you know. It's the others, the likes of Joe Linton, who are putting that body on the line, sort of up and down, in and out of challenges. He's picking up problems. Joe Willock is what you'd call, I think, you know, a runner, a real physical player, up and down, going 110% every week. His body has started to give way on him. So it's just a theory. I don't know if it's right or not. It's just something I've thought about in the last few weeks, which comes back to my point about looking at the makeup of the players in terms of who and who can't handle what you're asking them to do going forward. So many questions in the Sven Botman injury this week. It's just brought into focus because of the nature of the, we would call it a recurrence now, you know, people I spoke to yesterday are saying it's a fresh injury that was suffered at Manchester City. Okay, fair enough. But it's the same knee and the same ligaments that there was the problem with back in September. Now, who made the decision not to operate? Was it Sven Botman himself? Was it the Newcastle medical staff? Was it everyone combined with Eddie Howe's input as well? You know, someone made a decision not to operate in September. Now, they might say that was the right decision because, you know, he did actually carry on playing for another 3 months. The evidence is there. He was fit to play Premier League football. But come on, he clearly wasn't the same player. Now, on reflection with hindsight, they would have been better off in September saying no, or even October, further down the line, just saying no, come on. It's time to operate now. It's taken an injury against Manchester City to do it. Goodness knows how much that would have set him back or caused even greater damage. So that whole situation is a mess. And when we ask question one the very next Friday, it will be on Sven Botman and the injury situation there.
Yeah, I do look forward to the answer. I know Sven Botman put a little social media post out sort of saying he's, you know, gutted and committed to Newcastle and everything else. But it's been inferred that he was the one who said, no, I want to play. I want to try and help the team. Whether that's true or not, whether that's just, you know, a club statement, so to speak, there's neither here nor there, because I agree, Craig, if this was the risk, the club's medical staff surely should have just said, no, even if you want to play, this is a bad idea because you're just going to, you know, get more injured. That's surely what physios are paid for. That's surely what their job is to analyse the players. You know, if you ask any football player, do you want to play? Do you feel like you're all right to play? They're going to probably say yes. Surely they've got to then say, no, absolutely not. This is not a good idea, and make a call. And it sounds like those calls have been up in the air, and I get that kind of the situation is we've had no one else to use and the squad's been so threadbare that maybe the whole collective, including the player, have been happy to take risks. I don't know. It's another symptom of kind of how badly this season has kind of gone off the rails, and in some respects now off the rails is a strongly way to put it, because I think it's still okay and we can still finish all right and get back into Europe. But in terms of all the things that have happened and the injuries being the main talking point for the whole of the season now, This is you're right, Craig. This is the kind of come to fruition. Like, we thought it was going to go away and it hasn't. So now we know for certain there is a problem. And my biggest worry, and John, I'll bring in after I've said this, I don't know if this goes away, because we've talked all season about the kind of the players who've been running to the ground, the likes of Dan Byrne, Fabian Scher, Sean Longstaff, Callum Wilson, if he stays. These are all a year older. Trippier's a year older. These players are, you know, there's a big rebuild needed in the summer, but we're still going to need some of these players to stick around. They're still going to have to play a lot more football, and I just can't see these injuries clearing up. That said, I think midfield-wise, there was a plan from last summer. We were supposed to have Elliot Anderson and Lewis Miley there as the kind of understudies to come in and rotate the squad. Now, you said it correctly earlier, Craig. I don't know why some of that rotation wasn't happening earlier in the season when we had the opportunity to do so, when we had some of these players fit, and I include Tino and Lewis Hall in that, but the fact that we've ended up with three or four midfielders out for most of the season probably wasn't planned for. And as soon as that happens, you then are running the remaining three midfielders into the ground. But John, I'll give you a chance to speak here. Injuries, what's your view?
I think there's potentially an issue with the medical team. I think there's possibly an issue with the culture generally about if you're injured and trying to like rush yourself back. So from that point of view, if you almost drive this culture of you want to be involved, you want to be making sure that you're doing everything you can to play, or you're too worried that you might lose your place, is that why Murphy came back? Like, when, you know, really probably could have done with surgery initially, which was proven when his shoulder dislocated again. Nick Pope played until the last competitive game of last year in a similar way with a broken finger and then got operated on straight away. And someone made a really good point in our group chat, didn't they, about Sven Botman, that is it a coincidence that happened after the FA Cup? You know, as soon as we're out the FA Cup, actually now's the time to get Sven out and get him, operated on, I suppose. So, look, this isn't just a this season problem, but I think they need to look at it, and you put it well, Si, if the players made that decision, why aren't the medical team saying, well, no?
Yeah.
So that'd be my question.
Will it early in the season as well? We're also finding out in the last few weeks that Longstaff's playing with a load of injections and injuries. We learned about Bruno last season, the second half of the season, when he seemed to be not really playing as himself, that it turned out he was playing with multiple issues with his ankles. Like, it does, you're right, John, seem like a bit of a cultural thing that we just play through the pain, but surely that's not the plan, Craig.
Yeah, I mean, the recurrence is the concern. The fact that how many players now have suffered recurring injuries this year? Alexander Isak, Joe Willock, Sven Botman, Jacob Murphy. Is that four? There might even be more, you know. It's the inability to, or the failure rather, to identify exactly what the problem is and do something to correct it so it doesn't happen again. And it seems to me as if Newcastle now are carrying players who even when they come back, they're never really fully fit. Will Alexander Isak ever be a player who is at 100%? And if so, how long? What does 100% look like, and how long does 100% last for? It seems to me, even now, Isak's played a run of games. I still don't think we're seeing the very best version of Isak. Do you? I don't. Whether he needs another striker with him there to carry the load, but he doesn't seem to me like someone who can do it week on week for 90 minutes. And this is even when the club aren't in a period of playing every 3 or 4 days. You know, Joe Willock has come back in, and yes, he looked fantastic in the first couple of games, Wolves in particular. But since then, he hasn't looked himself either. You know, the Sven Botman one we've already talked about. So yeah, it goes back to all the questions I listed before, guys, in terms of the, as much as anything this year, there has to be a full-on medical review across the board, because as you quite rightly said, Si, something I've been saying for a while, you can't just expect to get to this summer and everything to clear up. It's not. All of the evidence points to this running into next season as well.
Well, especially if we're going to fly to Australia to play a game after all of this. That's madness, yeah. If you ask me. Based on the situation we're talking about, surely, financially speaking, that's not worth it if the players are this crippled, for want of a better word. So yeah, it's a really tough one. It elevates from part one of the podcast, the size of the rebuild job that's needed, because I think squad depth is an issue. And even if we're playing Europa Conference next season, I don't think squad depth is sufficient. There's still a lot of deadwood to move on, of course, to kind of make space. But how do we fix this, Craig? Is there a massive transfer kind of summit to be had? And are they going to have to really seriously look at turning over a decent amount of this squad? Can that be done? Will we be able to get rid of players who have known injury problems? How big of an issue is this, and can it be solved?
Well, you asked the question about moving on players with injury problems. Callum Wilson, you would have said at the start of the season, if they're going to sell him, you know, in January or at the end of the season, would be what, a 15 to 20 million pound striker? You know, if you're still in around the England squad, you're looking at Wilson now, that value is half. He's someone we do fully expect to go in the summer. Joe Linton, if he doesn't sign the new contract, well, he'd be going into the summer as a player who has missed the last 4 months of the season pretty much with injury. So, you know, all the while, the injury problems are shaving value off these potentially saleable assets. So where do they go? Well, one player I know they're speaking to, and this might be an avenue they've got to explore more, is Lloyd Kelly, who's available as a free transfer in the summer. Someone Eddie Howe knows well from Bournemouth, with the news on Sven Botman, all of a sudden the need for a left-sided defender, that becomes even more pressing. Lloyd Kelly, someone I would expect to see the same movement on. But, you know, we said last year they didn't do enough to improve the first 11. And I always say, buy better, buy players who come into the first 11, and then it filters down, then your squad automatically becomes, you know, stronger by virtue of the players who were starters dropping out. It's getting to the point now whereby they might actually have to buy some cheaper squad options just to improve depth. And that wouldn't normally be a tactic or a philosophy I'd go along with. I don't think they've actually got the scope, FFP-wise, to go out and buy 4 or 5 new starters for 40, 50 million pound each. So it's a really tricky summer. It's going to take some real invention, some real clever thinking, and they're going to have to rediscover the Midas touch they had during the first two transfer windows, and this one coming up. There's going to have to be trading as well. You know, I think if they do finish outside the European places, don't be surprised to see a relatively big name move on in order to create some headroom to bring in others.
I suppose, on that point, though, have they still got the project to sell that they had to sell Bruno and Botman and even Isak last summer. Can we still convince a good European players to come to Newcastle, or are we now going to have to try work harder to convince anyone to come and join what's become a bit of a roller coaster club this season?
Well, they managed to convince Botman and Guimarães to come when Newcastle weren't a Champions League club. They managed to convince Alexander Isak to come on the back of, you know, the first season when they escaped relegation. So yeah, I think they can, but that's the point. You know, there were, and that, to be fair to them, has always been their model. It's been about identifying players beneath the radar to a degree. I hadn't heard of Bruno Guimarães when they signed him. I only knew of Sven Botman because of Newcastle's interest in them. Likewise, to a lesser extent, Alexander Isak. But, you know, they've got to go out and do that again. Like I said, they've got to rediscover that magic that they had in the first couple of transfer windows. And that now is the challenge for them, coupled with buying Premier League hardened players who are ready to come in and hit the ground running, like you would hope a Lloyd Kelly type would be.
Not difficult then. It's yeah, the challenges that you've laid down in part one and part two of the show, it just seems like so much to do, and they've got to find a director of football, and they've got to kind of work out what they're doing stadium capacity wise. There's so much to do that I think your article is basically coming back to that, is explaining that, yeah, there's so much more ahead to get us to where to being an actual top four club. We got there on adrenaline almost alone last season. Yes, we had some great players and they got us there, but everything else has now got to catch up. The depth of the squad, the size of the stadium, the commercial, everything else. There's so much more work to bring that in line with being a top six club, because we're not even, I think wage bill wise, we're about seventh. Commercial revenue, no idea, much further down, but it's been a real eye-opener of a season in all of these aspects of how much catching up to do. It kind of feels like even this summer, you can't fix all that in one summer, and we need to maybe accept that this project is going to take a bit longer, and that the Premier League itself is adding more and more kind of restrictions to that. We've no idea where they're going with FFP or PSR rules. Nothing's been decided yet, but, you know, that's going to change, and it doesn't look like it's going to change for the benefit of Newcastle United, so that's going to be another challenge to overcome. I'm talking myself in a really negative place here, Craig. Thanks for coming on. But yeah,
it's not negative though, Si. It's just realistic, and it comes, you know, you said there, this one summer window isn't going to change everything. I agree. But this one window, I think, could set the tone for the next two or three windows and the next two or three seasons going forward. It's a huge, huge summer for them.
Yeah, exactly. It's just about keeping everything going in the right direction. It might not be it's never going to be in the same trajectory that it was in the first 18, 19 months. That was a fairy tale. And now we're back to reality, as we keep saying. It doesn't mean it has to be a bad thing. So yeah, we'll round up this part of the show with that.
It's not a bad thing. You know, it's where they're currently at, and, you know, supporters, journalists, those inside the club have just got to face up. But that's not a criticism. It's incredible. Wow. You know, to do the job they've done since coming in, you know, in October of 2021, wasn't it? You know, to do what they've done since then, for us to be sitting here now having these conversations, is actually testament to the wonderful work they've done and how much they've actually got right. You know, on that as well, you know, one question we haven't answered, I'll ask it of myself, you know, what happens to the manager? What happens to Eddie Howe if they do finish outside the European places? Will he survive that? Well, the information we've got is that yes, he will, and so he should as well. You know, Howe, more than anyone for me, has been the accelerant in terms of Newcastle's journey. I think he deserves this summer, next season, whatever it is, whatever he wants to try. And I was going to say, put it right, you know, it hasn't gone wrong. It hasn't gone terribly wrong. There's massive mitigation attached to all of it, but he deserves the chance to get the team to where I think he can take them on a more regular, permanent basis. I think he's a fantastic manager. And I'm someone who ordinarily doesn't really like managers. I think he's excellent. He's made mistakes this year. No, someone said to me the other day, you're really contradictory. You know, you've spent all season talking about how the team aren't doing this, should do that, and yet you say Eddie Howe's the man. Well, those two things can be true. You know, I don't have to say Eddie Howe is the best manager for Newcastle and then defend everything he does. That would be ridiculous. I can say Eddie Howe's the best manager for Newcastle. I'll do that now. I'll say it again. I'll keep on saying it. But I also think he's made mistakes I think he's good enough to learn from. So, you know,
Spot on.
I don't know if you guys agree with that. What's your take on where they're at with Eddie?
Well, mine is exactly that. I agree. I think by his own admission, he would say there's been mistakes made. I think, you know, it sounds like the club as a whole has made some mistakes, because it's not just Eddie Howe making every decision. You know, he's got a backroom staff. They've all come to some conclusions that perhaps they shouldn't have done. There's been questions about how he's rotated the squad this season. I think he struggled to adjust to 3 game weeks, certainly in the Champions League period of the season. You know, he would have learned from that. This is why, and I said this on last week's show, the Europa Conference, if that's where we end up, would be actually a really good learning curve for us. You know, 3 game weeks, but with some fixtures that you can afford to properly rotate your squad. I think just the nature and the size of those games meant he, for whatever reason, felt obliged to just keep playing the strongest team he felt he could field, even if there was players running in the red. I think, as we described at the time, Craig, like Anthony Gordon, you know, the opportunity could be there to learn to kind of... The one thing we've said about Eddie Howe is that given a week to prepare for a fixture, he's the best. You know, he will prepare the team, he'll come up with a game plan, and more often than not, you can see that on the pitch on a Saturday and it works. You know, at this season, we haven't seen as much of that. 3 game weeks put that out the window, where they just weren't on the training ground at all. What's been concerning for everyone is that since we've had weeks on the training ground, it hasn't got that much better. It has improved this side of the new year. You know, you can't disagree with that, but I think too much damage was done. Too many of the players are running on fumes, and still remains the case, who need to come out the team. You know, Longstaff and Miley in particular, in a midfield that couldn't change. So there wasn't going to be a quick solution. There wasn't going to be a quick return to the kind of form that got us into fourth. And I think I'm okay with that. I understand that. And I think with the summer and a bit of a rebuild and a kind of lessons learned, which I'm sure there will be, I totally agree. I think he is the best. And, you know, what we're looking at with FFP and PSR, or whatever we're going to call it, is the fact that Newcastle might still struggle to add too much to this squad unless we get a huge super deal for Bruno, and then we start again with whatever money that brings. But realistically, he's going to have to still work with what he's got, with maybe a couple of additions. And if there's one manager that in the time we've had him, we know can improve what he's got and manage the squad in terms of their ability and get them playing above their levels, it is Eddie Howe. I don't know that any alternative can come and get the best out of the players in the way that he has done with the squad he's inherited. So I still think if we're going to be limping on with some of these squad players that he's had the whole time, he is the best man for that job as well, albeit we're desperate for a rebuild. And as I said before, some of these players have another year to their age, quite a few of them well into their 30s now. There's going to be problems there, and we need to find a solution to that. But yeah, I don't really disagree with anything you said, Craig, and I also agree that you don't have to be one or the other. You can criticise and or ask questions of what's happened this season and point out that some mistakes have been made while still thinking that the manager is the best man for the job. So yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We'll come back for one more part. Obviously, if you like what you're hearing here, Craig does join us regularly on Patreon, where you can join us for at least as little as £3 a month. And yeah, we'll get a bit more insight as we go into the summer from Craig, as always, on the transfer window as things happen.
So just while we're plugging stuff, guys, I've got my own YouTube channel as well, CraigHope_DailyMail. If you go and subscribe there, there's plenty of content there week on week. But I do love this, having a chat with you, Si. We do it fairly regularly, don't we? It's always good fun. And as well, the Daily Mail article, you know, if you guys can put a link in the description below to take us through the piece we've spoken about during the entirety of this show, it might benefit the listeners as a reference point. But I enjoyed writing that. You know, I was asked by my office down in London, what's happening at Newcastle? Where do they go from here? Where are they at? And it crystallised a few thoughts in my own head as well. So it was a useful process.
We'll be back shortly. Back for part three, Craig. And for once, I kind of want to move the story away from Newcastle a little bit. You were down at St George's Park earlier this week, and you'll be covering England in that big game against Brazil. Just kind of what's the mood down there? For once, I'm quite interested in an international tournament that's approaching. You know, the last one, the World Cup that came mid-season, and for all the stuff around it about where it was, the fact it was in the middle of the season was the biggest issue for me, because it was in the middle of Newcastle's best season in living memory for me. You know, it was not what we needed. We finished in third and then had to wait 6 weeks to pick up the season again. At the time, I didn't want an international tournament, albeit as a World Cup, it was reasonably entertaining. There were some good games, but this one I'm looking forward to, and it's nice that there's Newcastle players being represented both for England and other teams. But yeah, what's the kind of, what's the mood in the camp down there with Gordon, obviously, as well?
Yes, I was down in St. George's Park yesterday. Anthony Gordon was speaking. I also had a little bit of time with Jared Branthwaite, who would solve a problem on the left side of Newcastle's defence, wouldn't he?
Jared Branthwaite as well. I went as well.
I got there a little bit earlier. I went and watched the under-17s play against Northern Ireland at St. George's. Now, the Newcastle right-back, Leo Shahar, he was playing, did okay. Chris Rigg was in midfield. He was captain, the Sunderland's midfielder, who Newcastle are looking, he was very good. And Trevan Sanusi was an unused sub on the bench. And Ollie Harrison came on as well, the young boy, teenager, who was at Newcastle and went to Chelsea. So plenty of interest from that perspective. But to answer your question, Si, about England, the first team, the senior team, it comes back to a word we touched on earlier in this pod with regards to Newcastle. It's expectation. And the one thing I get going into this summer tournament is that now England are expected to win. There's a real anticipation. I think that comes on the back of, it's only really one or two players who've got to change this. And I think the fact that you've got Jude Bellingham playing the way he is at Real Madrid and scoring the goals he is, I think Jude Bellingham is the one who has just elevated that expectation. Because there's really, you know, for the last 3 or 4 years, England have always had a good squad. They've always had exciting players. Harry Kane has been there, but, you know, perhaps coupled as well with Kane going to Bayern Munich and scoring loads of goals there. And, you know, I think those two, it just feels like England have two of the best players in Europe right now, coupled with a fantastic supporting cast of, you know, Saka, Foden. Wow, how's Foden a supporting cast? Declan Rice, you know, wonderful. I just think they've got the questions about the defence, of course, but I just think they've got the squad and they've got the players there now to rightly go as favourites. And that's the real feel I get from being around the camp, is that anything less than winning the tournament this summer would probably be classed as a disappointment.
Yeah. John, do you look forward to the Euros? Do you like an international tournament? Like, for years, international football is probably more desirable than Newcastle over the seasons. At the minute, it's give or take, you know. But last season, I didn't want international football at all. But where are you looking forward to the Euros? Are you looking forward to seeing Newcastle players? Because it's the one thing that was also the case, you know, in the last 15 years, was that there was hardly any Newcastle players that were of European international standard. So yeah, what are you looking forward to?
Yeah, I definitely turn on to England when it's the World Cup or the Euros. I don't really tend to bother around qualification, around friendlies.
Nobody does.
Yeah, well, that's all right. That makes me feel better then. But yeah, I think it's nice to see, you know, we've got some good players that are going to be part, you know, Newcastle players that are going to be part of not just the England squad, but other squads. And yeah, England now, it's very difficult. It's almost like, you know, you've got that Newcastle mindset with England. Like, you follow them your entire life. They're not particularly good or can't. There's times when there's that hope and then it all dies off. And England's been a very similar journey. I think especially the Euro 2021 final. I mean, I think, you know, I saw my nephew, like, pretty much in that moment realise that, like, he was going to get disappointment from football. I said he was going to, you know, and at the time it was before the takeover happened. And I said, well, you know, you're a Newcastle fan, like, you're going to have to get used to this kind of thing. So really for me, we should be competitive with that squad. We should be going into games. And I think I can't remember a time when we've played Brazil at home and, you know, we've been overwhelming favourites to win that game. You know, we're odds against on Saturday night. I think Brazil are like 3-1, which is crazy to think that we're in that world.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a very good parallel, actually, Newcastle and England, because it's a lifetime of disappointment with barren spells galore and then the occasional moments where you think, actually, this team's going to do something. And I agree with the kind of general mood in the camp that Craig's just described. I think this is, it's Southgate's last chance to win something, but it's also just like, this is the time. They are a really, really good squad of players. And you've got players like Anthony Gordon, who I'll be surprised if he gets many minutes, but we'll see. I don't know. We don't know yet what the plan is for him, but you've got players like him coming through and breathing down the necks of those kind of well-established internationals. And yeah, I suppose, Craig, just to round off, Anthony Gordon, who's been kind of the talisman of our season, you know, he's been the one real big good news story in this England call-up, kind of is the least he deserves for how well he's played, and the fact that he's been, you know, injured for 7 months 1 week and then suddenly available the next week because he seems to be invincible in terms of the amount of minutes he's played. But yeah, do you see him getting much game time? What was his mood about his call-up?
Just excitement. Like I said, I was lucky enough to, 2 weeks ago, before the England squad was announced, I went up to the training ground, had an hour with him. And, you know, you can find that interview as well if you search. You know, it was a brilliant company, really, really engaging. You sit down with a lot of players and it's nonsense, some of it. Like, they're just so dry sometimes. he wasn't. He was the opposite of that. Every answer he thought about, you know, he had colour, he had there was passion there, there was conviction. One of the best interviews I've ever done. And he was there, you know, St George's Park speaking again yesterday. And the other guy said the same, you know, he's a good character. For all the irony that Newcastle had signed someone with a bad attitude and a bad character, that couldn't be further from the truth. He's the real deal. Got a lot of time for him as a person and a player. I hope he plays. You know, I'm going there as an England reporter for the Daily Mail, but you know, at the same time, I've always got one eye on the Newcastle angle, and I really hope that Gordon does get on. Wow, wouldn't that be something? You know, making your debut against Brazil at Wembley. So we'll wait and see. I think he will get minutes. He's got to get minutes. You know, it's the last chance for Southgate to see these players. So the likes of Branthwaite and Gordon, who are uncapped, he's going to play them at some point to see how they handle it. So yeah, and I'm the same to you guys. You know, I do now travel all over the place doing the qualifiers and the friendlies. And I get it when you say you're not that interested in some of the qualifiers, because it's only really interesting when England lose. And there's more, you know, more narrative, more fallout around it when they win. It's expected. But I do think these two coming up, especially with it being the jeopardy of squad selection on the line and Gordon being there, I think there's a lot more riding on this. And I'm really looking forward to Brazil on Saturday night. I think it'd be great fun.
Yep, looking forward to it too. We'll leave it there, Craig, because that's a nice positive. After quite an interesting chat about Newcastle, that's a nice place to leave it. So yeah, thank you very much, Craig, for joining us. We will be back next week, because we've got another week of no Newcastle to fill with a podcast. But yes, thank you very much, Craig, for joining us. We'll be back very soon. Cheers.
This podcast is brought to you by Aspers Casino Newcastle, home of the Mag's £4 pint, available on all draft beers for all NUFC home and televised games, 12 p.m. to 12 a.m. Over 18s only. Visit begambleaware.org. Be drink aware. For details and T's and C's, visit aspersnewcastle.co.uk.